Hey, Bitch Talkers, this is Erin. We have a really special interview for you. But before we get to that, we are going to be at Cobb's Comedy Club this Sunday, September 8th. We are helping to promote the really funny comedians who happen to be women's show featuring Irene Tu, Natasha Muse, Sandy Steck. It's hosted by Chelsea Bierce, plus more. And we're going to be there podcasting beforehand, not in front of everyone, just in the green room. But we'll be there. We'll say hi. You guys should come through. Support your local comedians and podcasters. You can find those tickets at cobbscomedyclub.com. We'll hang out, have drinks afterwards. It starts at 7:30. You have to be 18 plus to come in. Please come. It's going to be a fun time. We're super stoked to do this. Don't forget, you can find us at bitchtalkpodcast.com. You can find us at bff.fm every Monday morning from 5:30 to 6. And without further ado, this is an interview with Jillian Bell, who is the actress and executive producer of a film called Brittany Runs a Marathon. I'm also sitting down with the writer, director of this film. His name is Paul Downs Calazo. And please enjoy and please support this film. I know we say that about a bunch of films, but I really love this film. Here's the interview. Welcome to Bitch Talk, booze and interviews straight from the heart of San Francisco. This is Erin. We are in a very special area of the city. It's called the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. If you follow this podcast and listen, that usually means we are interviewing some really cool folks. I have an actress, executive producer, and currently in the Hemispheres magazine, actress Jillian Bell. You don't want to know why I know that. And we also have writer-director Paul Downs Calazo of the film Brittany Runs a Marathon.
And reader of Hemispheres magazine.
And also a current jogger, right? Is that what you're talking about?
It's not jogging. It's like that high-intensity training thing. I don't really know the
cross-training?
You like get on the treadmill, you jog, then you go at 7, then you go at 7.5, then you go at 8, and then you go at 12.5 for 30 seconds, and then down to walking pace, and then back to 12.5.
And then they make you do like ab work in the middle.
Yeah,
or
and then they make you be very dangerous with your joints for 12 minutes, cool. And you look lazy and sloppy, and you're like, walk out of there, and you're like, oh, kick my ass.
I've done Barry's before, and yes. I was shaking.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
It feels intense.
It is intense. It is. And it's great.
And your body's like, is it 5 a.m.? And you're yeah. Like, yes.
You're like, yes, it is.
Wake up.
Yes, it is. I wanted to speak with you first about the film, obviously, and your personal story with it, Paul, and if you can expand for the audience about this film.
Sure. I mean, it started on a couch, and it started on a kitchen floor, having a conversation with my friend Brittany O'Neill, who was my roommate in my mid-20s. We'd met in college. We studied drama at NYU together, and we just always liked making each other laugh, and she was an expert at turning everything into a joke. But we were trying to figure out, I think as a lot of people are in their 20s, what's the road ahead look like and how can I have a little bit of control over that? And why is my life right now not indicative of the future I'm hoping to have? So out of a very vulnerable conversation, she decided to start running and she went for her first run. And I thought, well, this might be a movie. This might be a movie. Somebody who is so joyfully clownish and fun and funny and ironic, suddenly looking to earnestly pursue a goal or an ambition and change her life and stop being the sidekick in her own story, which was something I related to. And so I started outlining.
Cool. And Jillian, why was this story for you when you read it?
I was looking for something different and trying to get out of my comfort zone. I really love doing comedy and I thought, you know, let's switch it up though. And my manager was on the look and she sent me this script and she said, I think you're going to fall in love with this, but I think you're going to read the first 10 pages and be nervous. Maybe about its intentions, because a lot of times people get this kind of story wrong.
Right.
And she said, but keep reading, you're going to fall deeply in love. And that's what happened. I read it and I laughed and cried and I, you know, met up with Paul and we both sort of had that moment of like, what are your intentions with my daughter? And because we were very protective of of Britney and the movie and what we were saying. And we both were on the same page and just agreed to constantly be having creative conversations about every single line about the film. And I just felt like I was in the right hands.
And when did you end up meeting Britney?
I didn't end up meeting Britney until we were shooting. We were shooting a pretty emotional scene and she came to set and I was instantly like, are you okay? How are you doing? Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure she was all right, because that can be an interesting thing to walk into. Is, you know, a lot of these scenes, though, aren't based on her real life.
Literally, it's, no scene in the movie is a recreation of something that happened in real life.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
It started with the idea of her emotional arc. Okay. And this character who uses humor as a shield and as deflection and has been relegated to the role of a sidekick, mm-hmm. sort of stepping into her own. And it was, you know, I was able to borrow milestones from her life to put into our Britney's journey. But it was never, you know, this is Britney, that my real friend is Britney O'Neill and this character is Britney Forgler. And it was important that I have the artistic liberty to go out and create a story and a character that had its own arc for an audience so that we could tell the story fully. And so that it wasn't, you know, I wasn't doing a biopic of my friend. I was really inspired by what she was deciding to do with her life. And it was important for Jillian to then, you know, be able to own the character as her own.
Yeah. And can you talk about one of the main threads of the story is friendships and relationships. Mm-hmm. Was that more about your relationship with Britney? Or again, was it outside stories that you were kind of bringing in? But loosely, not too personal?
Partially. I mean, my into writing this was my transformation, is a strong word, but my decision to come out as a gay guy and when I was 23. And that, when I started to be authentic and honest and stopped hiding behind a shield that I had up that was really sort of, I was, you know, I was hiding behind the patriarchy in a lot of ways. I was clinging onto that identity as a source of power and protection. And, you know, sort of having enough of that and realizing that my circle of friends was changing as I was being more myself. And I had a friend who I remember he would always come over to my apartment, and I would remember every time he left, I thought, every time you're here, I spend the whole time trying to make you feel better about yourself, and you spend the whole time trying to make me feel worse about myself. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is not a friendship. And I, you know, stopped talking to him. And it was necessary for my growth.
Boundaries
and self-respect and investment in time, you know, investment of time. Who did I want to invest in? You want to give and you want to be fed. Mm-hmm. And so you need to find a balance in relationships where you can do both. And so for me, a lot of my early 20s was figuring out how to unlearn everything I'd learned growing up in a conservative, religious Georgia environment and sort of recreating my rubric for fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And I think we're always still doing that. I think we're all still doing that all the time. But part of that is about relationships, and part of that is who you share to connect with.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because I thought that was sort of a late 20s thing. Like, I just went through that. I'm in my mid 30s now, but
I thought it was a 30s thing.
That's what I found out after we screened this film. It was that everybody, I mean, we were having people, women and men coming up to us at the age of 70 or 80, and they're like, I'm still dealing with
right.
that. I'm still trying to figure out how to get rid of people who don't want to root me on.
Yeah, we thought we were doing a story really, I mean, I thought my emotional end was my experience, but that ultimately on its surface, people who would connect with this film were millennial women who felt like they'd gone through a similar journey. But like, as we've been going around the country, even right from Sundance, but like specifically like in Greenwich, Connecticut, so many men came up to me, so many men who work in finance came up to me and they were like, I've been doing this life because I thought this is what I was supposed to do. Yeah. And I got married and I never wanted to get married and I had kids and I never wanted to have kids, but it was just the role that I was assigned and I've just been doing it because that's what society tells me to do. And so there's sort
of a lot to take on.
Yeah. And you just sort of nod.
Those kids, I hope those kids are okay.
Well, I think that happens a lot. People start living the life that they think that they're supposed to live, and they feel that going against that is too scary. Mm-hmm. But the movie explores the sort of fuck that attitude. That the idea is we can all write the role we want. We can be the leads in our own story, and it can be whatever fucking story we want.
Yeah, and what are our own values, and what do we want for our lives?
Right.
That's a cool thing to walk away from a movie having to feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We want the audience to think about their own lives when they leave.
And they do. I was bawling. Like, I looked at my two friends at the same time, and we were just like bawling our faces off. Like, oh my God, I love this movie. Jillian, I wanted to talk about kind of what is it like to talk publicly about your body on and off screen? Because it's a thing. And we saw it in the Q&A last night.
It is a thing. Yeah. I actually just wrote an article for Glamour magazine. They approached me about writing anything about anything I wanted to. And I sort of just was like, I want to talk about body image and I want to talk about it in a different way because this movie really inspired me. I sort of, you know, I wasn't horrible to myself, but I would say, make a joke before I thought someone else would say something, or I would put myself down or look at myself in a different light if I didn't fit into a pair of jeans that I did 2 months before.
Right. Yep.
And so,
or the night before.
Yeah. Or the night before. It
yeah,
could be.
Quite frankly.
Really,
yeah.
Our bodies change so much. Mm-hmm. And I just wrote this article talking about how when I look back at old pictures, sometimes I would be so critical of who I was throughout my journey. And I just thought, especially as women, but men too, we have a lot of bodies. And I thought that was interesting to talk about, of like how sometimes when we're our happiest, we're heavier or thinner, it doesn't matter. But it's, you know, we look back and we have such judgment about ourselves. And I'm just tired of that. And so it was just discussing basically like, we're going to have all these different bodies and let's celebrate at all stages. How would that feel?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very powerful. Paul, you really got to the heart and soul of a woman. I really felt it. And the moment that I felt it, and that's when we started crying all collectively, three of us in the audience, it was the line of, it was nice to be a woman for once. I'm going to cry now. Where did that come from? I loved that line.
You know, sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I noticed how the world changed changed the way that it acted towards my friend Brittany as she was losing weight. And
it's different.
It was different, and it was exciting, and it was sad because she was feeling seen, and I thought, what a shame. Sorry, it's early. We've been on a press tour. I'm crazy.
No,
you're not crazy. That's an unfortunate thing.
Yeah, it affected me last night, and it just has stuck with me.
And I saw how it was easy to get swept up in the idea of the being valued by men.
Yep.
For nothing more than how you look. And the door holding thing didn't, I don't remember that happening with Real Britney's story as sort of a marker. But I remember in writing the story, just the simple gesture of somebody thinking to hold the door for you, that you deserve the door to be held for you. And that when she feels like she's going to gain the weight back, that simple validation of existence moments like that, mm-hmm. of feeling like you're worth something, that you're worth, that somebody's looking out for you, would feel gone because your value is gone now that you've reverted back to a look,
yeah.
just a look that your body naturally goes to.
Yeah.
It's so unfortunate. It's really troubling.
Yeah.
It's hard.
I was going to say, have you felt that way in your career and or life?
More in my personal life, I've gone through that. I'm lucky to have never been asked to lose weight for a role. I wasn't asked to lose weight for this role, but I just decided to take it on because I thought it would connect me to the character, and it did. But you know, I noticed after I got home, I wanted more people to be commenting on it, or if someone didn't comment on it, what did that mean? And if someone did comment on it, it was sort of like, well, you think I look better, in quotes, you know, all layers of it, it's really complicated. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to get to a place where I'm sort of like, I don't need any of it. It would have been nice if people were acknowledging it more on just the fact that it's hard work to lose that amount of weight. But when people would talk about, oh, you look really great now, or this is the way you should be. It was one of my friends actually said that, which was unfortunate. And I had to talk to him about how damaging that can be.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a conversation. And I think this film really sparks a lot of them.
Yeah. I actually have a silly question to end on, so we're not crying.
Sure.
I noticed a lot of Mexican food throughout the film in New York, and we were literally just in New York, came off the plane on Monday night, and we kept talking about Mexican food in New York. It was so weird. And then it was in the film.
I have to tell you, that was not intentional, and
okay.
It was just
because it was a
me.
Lot, right?
Yeah, I think it's just me liking Mexican food. Like, I also like dogs.
Oh, that's right. Jaron eats a lot of Mexican food.
There's a lot of, you go on the Mexican restaurant date, you eat tacos. tacos on
the date. Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of Mexican food in my life. Okay. And so as I was bringing myself to this story, I wanted that to be represented.
Well, I loved it. And it was just very timely. Because we're like, why are there so many Mexican restaurants in New York? But then you brought Mexican food to the screen in New York. So
it's authentic New York. It was my observation. It has nothing to do with my love for queso panino.
Well, I want to thank you two so much for this film. And thank you so much for sitting down on Bitch Talk.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Of course, yeah.
That was actress and executive producer Jillian Bell and writer-director Paul Downs-Calazo of Brittany Runs a Marathon. Please go see this film. It is one of my favorites of the year. I hope the rest of my Bitch Talk team gets to see it at some point.
I'm really bummed that I wasn't here for this one because it was the one thing in Sundance that I had hoped that we covered, but we didn't get to it. But I had heard a ton of great things. It won some awards at Sundance. And then when I heard from our friend John that it was coming through, I'm glad that one of us
I was able to make it work. And I actually took a friend of the show, Derek Hosberg, to the screening, and a friend of hers. And there was a moment. The movie has everything in it. That's all I'm going to say. It has all the things. And there's a moment where we all looked at each other and we were sobbing.
I was just about to say, did you cry?
Yeah, our faces were wet, like wet. But it's a great film for men and women. Please go support that movie. I think it's out everywhere at this point. If it's not, it will be. Again, it's called Brittany Runs a Marathon, one of my favorites of the year. Please go support it. Please, please, please. Take your friends, take your mom, dad, whatever, cousins. They'll really like it. So don't forget, we're going to be at Cobb's Comedy Club this Sunday, September 8th. You can buy tickets at cobbscomedyclub.com. We are hosting a night called Really Funny Comedians Who Happen to Be Women, featuring Irene Tu, Natasha Muse, Sandy Steck, and more, hosted by Chelsea Bierce. Come see us. Say hi. Grab drinks before, after, during, whatever. But support your local comedians and your local podcast. Find us at bitchtalkpodcast.com. Find us at bff.fm every Monday from 5:30 to 6 a.m. We are powered by GoTo Productions, and we'll see you later.
Bitch, please.